You are now tuned into anything potable, the most honorable, the most audible. Hold the applause, like Paul Pierce when he was fresh out the hospital, like Antoine when he shimmied after shots went through.
So welcome to Athletics Parable, the Boston Celtics podcast here on the Athletic Podcast Network. I am your host, Sam Jam Packard, professional sports fan. And I am not joined by the kid, the god, the legend, because he is conquering Europe. So instead, I have the other great Celtics reporter from The Athletic, Jared Weiss. And Jared, I think the most important question I have for you, who's going to be more surprised? Jay King, when he enters Europe for the first time? This is the first time he's ever left, I think, a continent.
Wow, first time.
Or is the country of Europe going to be more surprised when they encounter the kid for the first time?
It seems very on brand for the kid that we would misappropriate Europe as a country instead of a continent, just straight out the bat.
Of course.
I like that. He's walking into a land he doesn't know. He just he was sending a group chat a bunch of photos from the Acropolis and eating dinner and stuff like that while we're all there just grinding away at Celtics mini camp. I mean, he's clearly enjoying the life out there. He looks like a natural Greek, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I don't think the rest of the continent is necessarily ready for him. But he'll be back soon. In the meantime, we got ourselves a season underway. We had media day, and let me tell you, I've been to some of these events in the past. You know, normally they're times for fun, maybe a whimsical question here or there. This one didn't strike me as the most whimsical filled day ever. And the biggest takeaway I got from it was that the Boston Celtics players were kind of just as blindsided about the Ime Udoka news as the general population. But you were there. What was it like kind of having all the different players answer a similar question? And what was your take from like their responses?
I mean, no whimsy whatsoever. Like very, very disappointing day, obviously. We barely even got to talk about how much muscle mass that people have tacked on or lost.
Yeah, no best shape of their career.
I think Jalen had a best shape of my life in there. Al at least talked about his shape, but yeah, I mean, I think what was weird about it was you could see a lot of the players subtly expressing some frustration of why are we in the dark? Like, why at the very least are we, as like the main people working for Ime Udoka, not getting some explanation? And I think a few of them made it clear they understood why this was happening, but I don't think it made it less frustrating necessarily. And it's like everybody can move on and do their jobs to a degree, but when you're an NBA player, if you're not able to do your job 100%, it shows. And a lot of people get really mad and a lot of money is on the line, so there's this incredible pressure. And so they're in this unique position here where it's like they can, I think everybody else can kind of take their time to a certain degree to process everything that's going on. They don't really have the luxury of doing that. The first game of the preseason is less than a week away, which I didn't even realize until this morning how soon it was. Like the opening of training camp is really short, and they got a new coach now that's running things. It's not like they're the only team in the league with a new coach, and at least the new coach is someone that already knows everything. So at least they're avoiding those major hurdles of like new coaches to come in. And it's like, we're doing these drills differently. You're playing this role differently. You know, Mazzulla was pretty adamant day one and as well at first practice that he's not really shaking things up. He's gonna implement some changes at some point, but he already is similar to Udoka in a lot of the ways that he kind of operates and a lot of the ways that he looks at things. And he already knows everything that Udoka was doing. And what was interesting was probably more so on Monday than more so on Tuesday's practice than a media day, a lot of guys were just kind of like talking about Ime. And, you know, when somebody gets literally thrown out of the organization or suspended from the organization for a year, you know, what seems like is a half firing at this point, you don't really hear people talking about that person like they're present. They kind of treat it like Voldemort. And, you know, like today or Tuesday, Mazzulla was talking about Ime and how I do things differently, and Smart at media day was talking about how I still love Ime and all that kind of stuff. So it is weird how he has a presence, but also like straight up isn't there.
And I hope that's like a healthier way of dealing with it rather than just acting like he didn't exist. And this wasn't a wild surprise that like no one really was prepared for. It's going to be very, very interesting because the thing that struck me about last year's Celtics, it felt like, especially in the kind of like final 3 months of the season, it felt like they had a lot of respect for Ime, and they had a lot of good vibes and good chemistry, and were heading into this year with a lot of expectations. And they said all the right things during the media day, like, you know, we believe in Joe. Jason Tatum's like, we can get back to the finals. Everyone in this locker room believes that. And it's just like, how much is this really going to affect them on a day-to-day basis? Is this a built-in excuse? Is this actually like something that they can rally behind? It's very difficult to figure out how it's going to affect the team, but that's an interesting person. Like, what were the comment? What were they mentioning today? Just Ime talking about when he mentioned him in these casual Tuesday after practice conversations.
I'm sorry, I lost you, man. Can you say that again? You broke up for a sec.
I guess questions like that. You said they mentioned him today, Tuesday after practice. So you're just talking about like what he would have thought, how they just brought him up casually as if he was still in the building. That's kind of an interesting thing for me to hear.
Yeah, like it was Joe was asked what's the differences between you and Ime, and he's like, oh, well, Ime is more quiet. I'm more of a walk around kind of guy, and I think what it was that Mazzulla wasn't talking about like we need to forget Ime and we need to forget him, and you know, he was using his name comfortably because it makes sense. I mean, they liked each other. It's not like there's some sort of like ugly, you know, it's not like it's like some sort of fissure within that part of the locker room itself. But I think it was that Mazzulla was talking about it like he's picking up from where Udoka left off, in the way that you would think a caretaker coach would do, like the way like Luke Walton was doing it when Steve Kerr was there. But obviously this isn't just simply like short term caretaker situation. This is a interim, you know, probably more probable than not taking over for the coach permanently situation. So the fact that it seems like they're all kind of talking about it, like they're just kind of picking up where Udoka left it off as opposed to starting their thing anew, I feel like it's not like it's shocking. It feels weird compared to any other coaching change I've ever been around.
Yeah, but he's like, Mazzulla is still the interim coach. And so it kind of makes sense. And with the comments about how like Marcus Smart's comments about how like he still really likes Ime, I think it might be weird if they were just like, let's completely put this person behind for us, sure, and act sure like he's not there. So I just think there's like some it's just more pragmatic to be like, this is a situation that's actually happening and we can't ignore it. Now, Marcus Smart did step in the trash a little bit by saying nobody died. I don't think there's any ill intent there, and I don't think he meant it like as it came off, but like that was the headline quote coming off of that. I just think a lot of guys sometimes are just say some things, and as they said, they don't know what happened, but in all fairness to Marcus, he is right. Nobody did die that I am aware of.
Yeah, and well, I mean, if someone did, then obviously this is a different situation. But I think he probably would have been fired if that was the case. I mean, I think I would take that as one, Marcus Smart has had a lot of people die in his life. And so I think that's his perspective when people are trying to act like, is this some sort of massive critical emergency in which you guys are completely distraught and are depressed and need to be institutionalized to deal with the amount of angst you're going through? I think he's kind of saying like, it isn't like that. And don't baby us and act like we're going to fall apart and crumble as adults because our coach is suddenly gone, even if we're pissed off about it. And also, I just think that Smart is really pissed off that Udoka's gone. And it's not about necessarily like what happened, but the fact that they just took him away and they couldn't tell him what happened. And I'm sure they told, before what I've heard, they went to the players and said, we unfortunately can't tell you anything for legal reasons. The players, as good as our sources are, the player sources are a little bit better than ours. So, and they also were around behind closed doors to see some of the stuff that was going on. So it's not like the stuff that's been reported is something that they had absolutely no idea was going on. Like they probably knew to a degree what was going on, at least as far as like the general relationship and that relationship or potentially relationships from all this speculation out there. But it seems like it's just one relationship at this point. But so they have a pretty good sense of what's going on. But I think as much as they can figure out what's going on from their sources, when the team itself isn't telling them what's up, like that's going to create a trust issue, obviously. And they understand why it's happening, but it doesn't change the fact that it's going to create some fissure with the organization.
Yeah. And it's now it's kind of Joe Mazzulla's mess to try and clean up. he's going to do it driving a minivan. I think that was a big, big piece of news that came out of the first practice.
That's the biggest piece of news so far this week, honestly.
I think it's that and Luke Kornet starting with the ones. I'll give you a choice, a real Sophie's choice of which you want to talk about first. Minivan or the emergence of Luke Kornet.
I feel like that's a natural segue to start a minivan to go to Luke Kornet's potentially being this. And also, we don't know what position he's starting at. He could be the starting point guard. I mean, there was some footage of him handling the rock during the offseason. This
made sure everyone saw that crossover from Luke Kornet.
I mean, my favorite fact of the offseason is Brad Stevens has one like on his Twitter account, and it's an August tweet of Luke Kornet showing off them handles. So, I mean, maybe Brad has orchestrated all of this and told Rob to get the surgery just so he can finally get Luke starting at center. Maybe Luke just needed the right guys around him to turn into an NBA star. Who knows? But I mean, Luke's a great interview, so I hope he sticks around just for that sake. And also, he's a stretch five, and they need as much stretch five as they can get. But I don't think Luke is going to be starting the games. The idea of him starting would be that you are able to keep Grant Williams coming off the bench, and that way you get him with the second unit that you can balance your second units the way you want to. But like Luke, unless Luke is going to play dramatically better than he was playing before, like Luke wasn't even able to get
unless
minutes
he's
before.
A wildly different player than he was in the whole rest of his career.
Yeah, so I mean, Luke Kornet's had some moments in his career where you could see them starting him. Like a lot of teams will start a center who doesn't even really play that much the rest of the game just because it keeps the rotation balance. I would be surprised if they went that way, especially because Grant Williams he's gotten good enough that you could definitely start him and he would be like a solid starter. So, maybe Luke's way better, but if Luke is where he was before, I could definitely see him being in the rotation, but starting him just seems a little wild.
It feels like it's not a symbol like, oh, this is our opening day lineup. Like, go get the tip against Embiid, Luke. But it's more of a Rob Williams is out. We're going to need some sort of production from a backup center position. And the first person who's going to get a chance to kind of earn those minutes is Luke Kornet. I mean, with the extensive history of Brad Stevens liking that tweet, it feels like the organization has some belief in his ability. But like, I know Jay and I have talked about this all summer, especially after the Gallo injury. Is like, do they need to bring in another guy, or is Luke Kornet enough of a kind of a bridge piece to when Robert Williams can come back from his injury? Like, do you think Luke Kornet can give them 12 minutes a game off the bench, or do you think they kind of need more than that? And I'm just talking about the regular season at this point. Like they clearly need someone to step up there. And I like to believe in Luke Kornet, but I don't know if that's just me being wildly optimistic.
No, I mean, I like the possibility of Kornet getting regular minutes and he finds a rhythm with the shot and he becomes a serviceable two-way player, because the one thing he has that not a lot of guys can replicate is he's got that range on defense. Like he is long and he moves just fluidly enough that you can have him play the five with the way that Rob is playing it. And he can fill that role, theoretically. That's the word I'm trying to find. He can theoretically fill that role, right? So, I mean, have you seen enough from him in the past that you would like to give him a shot? Because, I mean, Udoka, there were a lot of times when, like, Tice was just getting killed out there, and I thought they were going to go to Kornet, and instead they just pivoted to going super small. So Udoka clearly was not looking to go to Kornet, but also it was the playoffs. So maybe it's just like, screw it, I'm not going to do this in the playoffs.
I think it's like, do you switch your defense around with Luke Kornet in there? Like, I feel like their defense was like, all right, we're going to switch everything and try and Tice might sometimes get burned. They did make some adjustments. It wasn't like they were switching Tice out onto everything. And Tice, I just feel like, moves his feet a lot better. I just don't want Luke Kornet really switched out on a lot of people, despite him like moving pretty fluidly. But I just don't think they're like the ask is that much. I don't think I think we're going to get a lot of Jason Tatum playing the four.
And, oh, yeah.
And so just because of given the roster distribution, there's just so many more talented guards on this roster. So I don't think Luke Kornet's going to need to play more than 12 minutes a game. Like I said, like I think Al Horford, if he's in the best shape of his life, as he claims, if he's going to be playing back-to-backs, as he claimed on Media Day, I think Luke Kornet can give you something. And if it doesn't work out, I think you can really just go small and use Grant Williams lineup. So I think he's the first viable option. I'd like to see him work out so you don't have to go, like, I don't know, turn to Cobb Ngele or Noah Vonleh, who I think are less likely of being successful there. But I don't know at this point. I don't know what else they have to, they have to try him out, because I don't know what else to do other than just completely just move to Grant Williams being the backup five, which I just don't think is the most sustainable option for them.
Yeah, I mean, he could probably do it to a degree. I was going through a list of, like, who in the East could Grant not guard. And it's like, there's not a lot of guys. Like, Jared Allen is a bad matchup for him. Mo Bamba is not an ideal matchup for him, but he at least knows Mo pretty well. Joel Embiid's a tricky one. It's like, Embiid obviously has a height against him, but Grant has the strength to at least push back in the post.
And no one can guard Joel Embiid, except for, I mean, like, Aaron Baines. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, Alson, well. So I think Cornette has to play, because you can't be starting the season playing Horford 34 minutes a night. And Grant, since Gallo is out and Rob is out, like, Grant's probably going to be playing in the low 30s, at least, I'd imagine. So, and then you also just don't want Tatum getting a ton of minutes at the four and having to bang with guys. So you want to keep, I mean, depending on the matchup, obviously, but you want to keep Tatum at the three as much as you can, to a degree. So I just feel like you have to get another center in that rotation just to make sure that Horford isn't gassing himself too early.
Another thing that I thought was interesting about Media Day was Malcolm Brogdon saying the Pacers basically gave him a choice of where to go, and he chose the Boston Celtics. I did not know that, but I think one of my big questions heading into the season is, how is Malcolm Brogdon going to fit in with this Celtics lineup? He's been a starter in the past. Now he's decidedly coming off the bench. Clearly he knew that going in. He was not surprised to learn that information, like Christian Wood down in Dallas. But I think that's, like, very important for his mentality and how he kind of mixes in. I don't know. What do you expect to see from Malcolm Brogdon, and how do you, like, it feels like bringing him in off the bench, it's just a commitment to be a much small, like, go much smaller this year. Like, they have much more talented guards. They have this issue with at centers. It feels like they're going to be a smaller team, but how do you think Brogdon fits in? Is he a guy who's, like, the immediate primary ball handler when Tatum's on the bench? Is he more of a spot up guy in the corner? What do you think Brogdon's role is going to be to kind of start this year?
Well, thanks for teaming up to promote my my new article. That's a 101 with Malcolm Brogdon that just came out on Tuesday. Hey, so it's not even out yet, so he hasn't seen it, but he addressed that. And actually, let me find that exact quote that I can.
This is journalism, people.
This is journalism. Why can't I find the quote? He said, oh my God, this is terrible journalism now. I'm going to have a mix. I'll definitely bring the ball down a lot, but I'm going to play off the ball a lot too. So I'm going to have to be ready to shoot both types of shots, like pull up versus spot up. So he said it'll be a mix of how he played in Milwaukee and Indy. The main thing was that he doesn't know exactly what Joe's going to do with him yet. He had a pretty clear understanding for what Udoka wanted out of him, and he's presuming it's going to be pretty close to the same under Joe. So I think that he's generally going to be playing point, and White will be off ball. But I think it's going to be similar to Smart, where, like, you know, Smart brings it down a lot. He might run that first pick and roll action. He's getting off of it earlier in the play than, like, a lot of other point guards. And so I think Brogdon's going to be in a similar spot. But, you know, what makes Brogdon good what works for Brogdon not having to need to play point guard is he wants to take more spot up shots. Like, he talked about, and it's in the story about how he shoots way better spotting up than he does off the dribble. Like, last year, he shot 22% off the dribble. Like, that's pretty much as bad as it gets.
That's not great. it's
insane.
Concerning and, number.
Exactly. And so last year he was hurt. He downplayed the injuries. I don't know how you can downplay the injuries when you look at the numbers. But the year before that, when he was pretty healthy, he shot like 44.5% on spot ups, then like 36.5% on pull ups. So it's like, those are, the pull up number isn't that good, but it's not terrible for that kind of shot. But obviously 44% from three on spot ups, that's elite right there. So I think he wants more of that in the shot diet, as people on Twitter that all my friends make fun of will call it. So hopefully that diet, it's nice and healthy, lots of fiber, lots of spot ups. That's what works for him.
Speaking of healthy diets, Jason Tatum is focusing on his. I don't really have more to say about that, but that seems like a good choice. Good for him. No more just piling on an entire bag of shredded cheese onto terrible looking tacos.
Just less Emo's pizza per week, I'm guessing.
St. Louis pizza is gross, but I'm not going to have Jason learn that I think about that. What do you think about just them going smaller in general? Like, I think a lot of their like success last year, they found this two big lineup that worked, and it was Rob Williams playing this weird center field while Al Horford took the biggest guy on the team. Obviously, with Rob being hurt, 8 to 12 weeks instead of the 4 to 6 weeks that was initially announced.
Nice surprise.
Nice little surprise there, and a fun week of news for Boston Celtics fans. Like, they're going to be a much smaller team. Do you think that changes their kind of approach on the defensive end? Just because, like, I would say at least until Christmas, or at least until Rob Williams comes back, they can't go to that double big lineup that was so successful for them last year.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird because I was hearing before training camp was starting a few weeks ago that they weren't really going to change anything up with the defense. It was mostly going to be the offense. I guess, I mean, the weird thing is, so, you know, we know, I'm sure everyone listening to the show has heard how the defense works in general. It's like, basically, you're switching most perimeter stuff. A team that runs pick and roll, the Celtics tended to have their power forward, which was like Horford or Grant, usually be up on the pick and roll. And they would instead of doing like a deep drop where they're just sinking all the way back into the paint, they would generally get up onto the screen. And then you have the center kind of playing zone on the back line. That was Rob's job. So without Rob, Horford is still really good at that. Cornette theoretically could be able to do that center role. But generally, you don't really have that backline guy that makes you more willing to play that kind of style. So it makes me think that maybe they are going to switch 1 through 5 more than they actually did last year. And I mean, they switched 1 through 5 a lot last year, and it was the most in the league, but they didn't do it like 100% of the time, like I think a lot of people think. So, I mean, do you think that they would just do it pretty much the entire time when Cornette's not out there?
It feels like the logical solution there, because they just don't have this double big like center. And so, I don't know. Brogdon said that he also thinks like him and Smart can be the best defensive pair, like guard in the league. I do think like they have the talented players with Brogdon, with White, with Grant, just kind of all athletes who can switch through everything. And really, like, if you're going to do that, just really increase the ball pressure. And you, to use a Brad Stevens phrase, really get into the ball. But I do think it's going to be kind of change the dynamic, and it's going to be an adjustment for them. Which is interesting because, like, there was no reason to change what they were going to do. You know, they had the amazing end of their season last year, and then this Rob Williams injury comes, and it's like, do you change the whole kind of persona of your team, or do you just like kind of try to build in habits with Luke Cornette maybe, and so you can just plug Rob Williams back in? How much are they focused on just like winning? I mean, obviously, you want to win as many games as possible, but I feel like usually the first 20 games of an NBA season, you're trying to establish what you run, how you do things, what your defense is. And are they trying to establish that for a post Rob Williams recovery world, or are they just kind of make an adjustment for like what the circumstances are now?
I mean, you gotta, like, you're getting Rob back in 2 to 3 months, right? So it's not like he's out for the season like with Gallo. So I think they probably just make a small tweak, but generally do their thing. Because, I mean, that's what they did last year, right? Like, when the scheme wasn't working, as they didn't know how to run it yet, they just kept doing it until they didn't suck at it. So I think that's probably what Joe does. It's just that Joe's in a weird spot, because if he doesn't, like, if they lose early on, that, like, this could get ugly quickly.
Oh, yeah.
If they lose early on, and it's because he's sticking to what they do, and he's not showing that he can solve the problem, then, like, the players could certainly lose faith, and then whether it's they're calling for Ime to come back, or they want something else, or they may, you know, maybe they bring in a veteran coach. I know Frank Vogel's name has been out there. Maybe they bring that guy in, then the team like wants that guy to take over. It's like, who knows? So I think that, I mean, I guess the good thing for Mazzulla is pretty lauded for his like scheme stuff and scouting opponents and stuff like that. So you would assume that that stuff is kind of his strength there. So I think that it's not broken yet, so don't try to fix it and give it some time. But it's like, he definitely needs to have a plan B for how the defense works. If not having Rob out there means that they can't really sustain it on a nightly basis.
I think the thing that's very interesting for Mazzulla, and something that I think Ime did incredibly well in his first season, was kind of holding players accountable for when their effort wasn't there, or weren't executing defense. I feel like a story from last year is like the team was really struggling and he did like a 3-hour film session with 70 clips for each player and just ridiculed them, which is something that I think someone of like Ime's stature can do. Can Joe Mazzulla, a guy who's literally, it's, well, I don't know where his office is, but I don't know if it's going to say interim head coach on his nameplate, but like everyone knows the kind of situation there. Is he going to be able to be similarly effective in kind of holding players accountable? Is he going to be like willing to do that, knowing that he was just kind of thrust into this role? A thing that's interesting to me is that he was the only coach that was like there before Ime. And so Ime brought in a lot of his guys from Portland and none of them kind of were named to be the head coach. I don't know how the hierarchy of the coaching staff worked before this kind of whole Ime situation, but it feels like there is like a core group of Ime guys. And then there was Joe Mazzulla. Rampant speculation, but that feels like it creates a weird, weird dynamic. That's just me from an outsider's perspective. Like, I don't know what Ime's guys are like thinking about heading into the season right now.
I mean, yeah, it is. I mean, what's good for Joe is that like Joe at least is the only other guy there that was a legit head coaching candidate this offseason. So it's not like they just completely picked him out of nowhere. But it definitely is notable that they picked the one non-Ime guy to be the head coach. But I mean, it makes sense. Like Joe was a summer league coach a couple years ago and then seemed to graduate out of that. And they gave it to Sullivan. And Joe is the one that's kind of known for being like a two-way coach. Like he's known for being like the guy that scout that really gets the scouts for both sides of the ball, is great at that kind of stuff, is less of like a specialist. And so I think all those things probably worked in his favor of getting the nomination. But yeah, it at least helps. You would imagine it helps at least maintain the sovereignty of the coaching staff in case Ime wanted to continue to be involved. I don't know if that would be a bad thing. I mean, Ime is a really good coach, so I don't know what the Celtics' obligation is for that. Because Brad, when he was asked about it at that first press conference, he wasn't like, "We told Ime don't talk to anybody anymore." He was like, he straight up said like, "Ime has his relationships and is going to do what he's going to do." So I don't know. Like I haven't ever asked Joe Mazzulla how much do you love Ime Udoka, but like everything he's ever said about Udoka to me has always been really, really positive. So. It would also be dumb of him to talk to the media and talk about how much he hates his coach, but no, I think even when I talked to him off the record, it was all really positive. So I think everybody there is really fond of Ime, regardless of whatever it is exactly happens. And I think Joe's just a good fit for the job because he has so many similarities to Ime, and he's like acknowledged that. So, and he can do this job and be himself without really significantly changing anything that Udoka was doing.
Okay, well, we're going to wrap up on this topic. It wouldn't be an off-season podcast if we didn't engage in some wildly reckless trade speculation. Old friend? Oh, he was a friend of mine, I would say. Boss Man 99, Bay Crowder, is reportedly out in Phoenix. And all the reports out there from the Athletic Zone, Shams Charania, say list the Celtics as a possible destination. I don't necessarily understand how that would happen given his $10 million price tag for this season. Explain to me how that works. Who would they have to give up if they wanted to bring in Jay Crowder? And I guess, would it be worth it? Would he really be an addition to this Celtics roster?
I don't know if he's exactly the kind of player they need. They probably need someone who's a little bit bigger. He's a three. He could play the four, I guess. So he could work. I mean, the only way you get him is you trade for him and a better player for Derek White or a bigger trade around Marcus Smart. Or you trade like Grant Williams for someone else that's good in Young and Crowder. Or you find a way to add salary to Gallinari and give them a draft pick. So those are pretty much all your options. I don't know if Phoenix wants Gallinari on a player option at 35 or whatever it is coming off of an ACL tear. I don't know if anybody really wants that. So that's the tricky part, but they don't have a trade exception, I think, to take in Crowder. And if they take in Crowder on top of their salary structure as it is, it's going to cost them like $40 million in tax. I don't think that's going to be worth it. So I really see it either as they don't want to extend Grant Williams because they think it's going to cost them too much money, so they'd rather get a really good young player, which is like, how, what would they even pull off there? I don't really know how this works, to be honest with you. I don't see a way for it to work. Maybe there's a three-way deal that they could work out.
It felt like the list of teams that were interested in Crowder were just all the teams that he played for originally. It was like, yeah, the Heat, the Cavs are into it. Maybe the Mavericks. And it's just, I don't know. It was just like a bizarre list. I don't know how. I just don't think it makes a lot of sense for the Celtics. As much as I'm a fan of Jay Crowder, Bossman99, typing everything in all caps, I just don't think it makes sense for the Celtics. But you know, I'm glad I'm not out on a limb there. But we'll see. Who knows? The past 2 weeks have been a whole bunch of crazy pills. New stories happening left and right. Jared, I appreciate you joining me, filling in for Jay as he terrorizes the entire country of Europe. I have one last question for you. Luke Kornet described himself as phlegmatic earlier today. First question, can you define the word phlegmatic?
Sure. It's someone that is of the essence of phleg.
That is correct. Second question for you. Is the word phlegmatic potable?
I mean, anything is
potable. Anything is potable!
Having an unemotional and subtly calm disposition.